news is there's a section that we've been covering for quite some time, and I believe we're going to be able to finish that section this evening. And the section is Canto 10, Chapter 12, Text 12. 10, 12, 12. And it comes after a really long section on 10, 12, 11, the Krita Punya Punja verse. So the scene is, it's this, the main story here in the storyline or pastime is Krishna's killing of the Agasura demon. And the chapter opens with the cowherd boys entering. They're still with calves because Krishna is now before 5 years old, between 4 and 5 years of age. And lots of cows, lots of calves, lots of cowherd boys, and off they go into the forest. And there's about 5 verses in a row that describes their activities, the boys, and how they would play all day long. And at the end of that description of their playing activities, text 11 comes, where Sukadeva Goswami, kind of like jumping up and down, says, how fortunate are these cowherd boys? They're playing with the personality of Godhead. So it reads, he who is the object of realization of the Gyanis, who are interested in Brahma-sukha, happiness of merging with Brahman, he who is the object of those who are worshipping him in Dasya Bhakti, and to the materialist who sees that same person as an ordinary individual, the cowherd boys are playing with him, and how many lifetimes of pure devotional service have they rendered in order to come to this stage. So then comes text 12. So it was the impersonalists, the bhaktas, the materialists. Now this verse is the yogis. Yogis. This is a translation of 10:12:12 from the BBT, Prabhupada's translation. Yogis may undergo severe austerities and penances for many births by practicing yama, niyama, asana, and pranayama, none of which are easily performed. Yet, in due course of time, when these yogis attain the perfection of controlling the mind, they will be unable to taste even a particle of dust from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then can we describe about the great fortune of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, Vrindavan, with whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally lived and who saw the Lord face to face? So this is broadening beyond the cowherd boys to all the residents of Vrindavan, because they see the Personality of Godhead daily, personally live with him. And so there's been commentary on that message that Shukadeva Goswami is expressing. The intimacy of the special feature of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. So here's this verse being commented upon in the final chapter of the 10th canto, chapter 90. Like the third to the last verse, this is spoken by Shukadev, who says, Lord Sri Krishna is he who is known as Jana Nivasa, the head pujari in the Mayapur temple, Jana Nivasa. Commonly people say Jananivas, but it's Jana Nivasa. Jana Nivasa means the ultimate resort of all living entities, Jana Nivasa, who is also known as Devaki Nandan and Yashoda Nandana, the son of Devaki and Yashoda. He, Lord Sri Krishna, is the guide of the Yadu dynasty, and with his mighty arms, he kills everything inauspicious, as well as every man who is impious. Look out. By his presence, he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert. His blissful, smiling face always increases the lusty desires of the gopis of Vrindavan. May he be all glorious and happy. So that's the verse. It's 10:90:48. The BBT commentary says at the beginning, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, Srila Shukadeva Goswami has composed this beautiful verse to console those who lament for the fact that Krishna did not continue to manifest his intimate pastimes in Vrindavan down to the present time. Here, Shukadeva Goswami reminds his listeners that the Lord is eternally present in this world, in his holy abode, his name, and the recitation of his glories. So now that's the verse, and then comes the commentary. Here is Jiva Goswami's comment or commentary on 10:90:48. Shukadeva refutes those who are mistaken about Krishna's human form, and he refers to this one, you know, the 10:12:12, this evening's verse. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, whose foot dust cannot be seen by yogis in samadhi, who have controlled their minds by severe hardship for many births, is eternally situated here, directly visible to the eyes of the people of Vraja. Oh, how can the good fortune of the people of Vraja be described? Another text is from the Damodar Lila, chapter 9. The Supreme Lord, who has no beginning and no end, no exterior and no interior, no front and no rear. In other words, he is all-pervading. So he's human, but all-pervading. That sounds contradictory, right? Then the first verse of Brahmaspiras, chapter 14. Oh, worshipable Lord, I offer my obeisances to you, to attain you, the son of Nanda, with a body, the complexion, with a body having a complexion of a rain cloud, with cloth flashing like lightning, with face shining something, peacock feathers, atop peacock feathers or something, and gunja berry decoration, with colorful forest garland, with beauty enhanced by yogurt rice stick, horn, flute, and soft feet. That's his human-like form. And then chapter 12, that's the same chapter, the Agasura story. If even once, only, or even by force, one brings the form of Lord Krishna into the mind, Krishna awards himself to as the goal. Residing within, he gives the jivas the experience of bliss by destroying all maya completely. What more can be said? That's Shukadeva speaking about Krishna's mercy. Then going back again to Brahma's prayer, chapter 14. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the other inhabitants of Vrajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune because Krishna gave them prema, which is the highest bliss, eternal and complete. Krishna's human form is described in Brahmanda Purana. Quote, Krishna's form is eternity, knowledge, and bliss, and gives bliss to the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And then the last reference is from Gopal Tapani Upanishad. The first part is we're quite familiar with. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eka bahunam yod vidadati kaman. We're used to hearing that from the two different Upanishads. But the Gopal Tapani ends different. Tam pritagam ye nuya janti vipras te sham siddhi shashvati netarasam. In the translation, the brahmanas who worship as he stands on his altar, the one who is greatest amongst the eternals and greatest amongst the conscious persons, who fulfills the desires of the many, they, as the brahmanas doing this worship, not others, attain eternal perfection. So that was a whole section describing the human-like feature of Krishna as being the repose or the rest or the basis of everything, the absolute truth. The same 10, 12 verses referred to in Krishna Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami, where he cites the verse. I'll read the translation again. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, whose foot dust cannot be seen by yogis in samadhi, though they have controlled their mind by severe hardship for many births, is eternally situated here, directly visible to the eyes of the people of Vraja. Oh, how can the good fortune of the people of Vraja be described? And then he adds, by the use of the word svayam, in this 10-12-12, svayam means personally, the misconceptions of the unintelligent, that is, that Krishna is not eternal, are clearly refuted. Now, we don't have a problem with understanding Krishna's form as eternal. And we have, you know, our really basic ones. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchitananda Vigraha, etc. But the Bhagavatam says it over and over again in many different ways. And so in each verse, this Krishna Sandarbha is the fourth of six Sandarbhas. And Krishna Sandarbha, it follows Bhagavat Sandarbha, where the principle of the personal feature of the Supreme is established. And then of all those features of the person, Bhagavan, Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. That's the final of the first four Sandarbhas. So we're going to read another section from Krishna Sandarbha, but he's taking this Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. We all know that verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Of all the different incarnations, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. So he's this whole Sandarbha is taking that topic and expanding it and expanding it and expanding it until you're like, okay, he's the source of everything. I surrender. In different references within the Bhagavatam. So the misconception that some people have that Krishna's form is not eternal is part of Krishna Sandarbha. It is eternal. He is personally present for all the residents of Vrindavan, so he's certainly a person. He's not in person. Then he quotes the Mahanarayana Upanishad, where it says, Narayana exists, pervading the whole universe and everything in it. He's a person. Continuing with Krishna Sandarbha, again, Jiva Goswami is referring to this 10-12-12. It should be accepted that his form is eternal and not simply a manifestation for a short time and serves a particular purpose, because there's a group of philosophers that speak like that. So he argues against it. Next reference is from Priti Sandarbha. That's the final of the six Sandarbhas. This is a topic that we've come across at least five times, and here it comes again. The distinction between seeing the Lord in meditation and seeing his personal form before you. Seeing in the mind and seeing the personal form of Krishna before you, or before the Brijbasis. External meeting of the Lord is superior to internal vision. That's his declaration. And then there's some scriptural references. Back to Damodar Lila. Such devatas as Lord Brahma achieve success by seeing your lotus feet in their minds by mature yoga practice. And now, my Lord, you have appeared before my eyes. Excuse me, that's not Damodar Lila. That's Canto 12. Pardon me. Canto 12. Chapter 9. Shridhar Swami's commentary says, Brahma and others, having attained sight of your lotus feet in their minds, are inferior. You have appeared to my eyes. This is a greater blessing. When one directly sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seeing him outside the heart is better than seeing him within the heart. One of the main references that started this off was Tapaloka. Tapaloka? No. There are seven upper and seven lower planetary systems. Bhuvar and Svargaloka. It's okay. It's going to go down shortly. Bhuvar and Svargaloka. That's three. Then there's four more. Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. That's seven. 3 plus 4. So Tapaloka is a place that's visited by Gopakumar. And when he gets there, he finds the people there. It's a place for celibates only. Just below that is Maharloka, and that's for grihastas that do yajna. In a tapaloka, it's brahmacharis and celibates that do meditation. And then they do meditation for a long time, because in their meditation, they're seeing the form of the Lord. Those that are doing yajna, when they offer ghee and articles into the sacrificial fire, the Lord appears from the fire and extends his hands to receive their offerings. So they like have long yajnas. And then when the yajna is over, he recedes back into the fire and they get ready for the next yajna, because they like seeing the Lord and making offerings to him. So in Tapaloka, they see him within their mind. So when Gopa Kumar goes there, no one's talking to him because they're busy meditating. And then after meditating, there's two things they do. They have very intense philosophical discussions, really high-level discussions. And they take a little prasadam and they go back and meditate. They must take a nap somewhere in there, but the main thing is meditation. And he is interested in what they're doing, Gopa Kumar. So Pippalayana Rishi gives this really interesting, sounds really good explanation that says, Gopa Kumar, what are you doing? You're going around here and there and all over the place looking to find Madan Gopal. We see him all the time. Then he gives this argument that seeing with the eyes is not as good as seeing with the mind, because before you can see something with your eyes, you have to see it with your mind before you can detect what it is. So really seeing begins in the mind. And so we don't have to go looking anywhere. We see him all the time in our meditation. So we'll teach you how to do meditation. So you teach him how to do meditation. And he sees Madan Gopal in his mind. He thinks, wow, this is really good. But after some time, he has this feeling intuitively, it's just not the same. My Madan Gopal is not just in my mind. So he goes on. He leaves Tapaloka and he goes to other places. And one of the places he visits, he's spoken to by the Vishnu Dutas, the same personalities that rescued Ajamila, agents of Vishnu. And they congratulate him. Nice going. You didn't fall for it, the Tapaloka idea. And he said, you know, you were told this, but higher than this is that. Where you were told that, and higher than that is this. So there's this, that's in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, but it's not just Sanatana Goswami's interesting idea. Here it is, in Jiva Goswami's Sandarbha, where he's making the same point in a different way. Rather than a story about Gopal Kumar, it's directly verses indicating, no, seeing the Lord in your meditation, that's nice. But better than nice, best, is direct seeing and direct relationship and direct service with the senses. So, when one directly sees the Supreme Personality Godhead, seeing him outside the heart is better than seeing him within the heart. One should also see the following. And here's our 10-12-12 verse. Swami Bhagavan Krishna. The meditators, the yogis, they, after lifetimes of austerity, they may come to the point of controlling the mind. They may not also. And however, they can't directly with their eyes see the Personality of Godhead like the residents of Vrindavan do all the time. Oh, how fortunate are the residents of Vrindavan. Are fortunate those who are engaged in that kind of service to Krishna. Another reference, this is Narada Muni speaking in Canto 1, Chapter 6. This is his talks with Vyas. When I sing his glories, the Lord, who makes any place that he touches holy, and who is attracted to those who sing his glories, quickly appears in my heart as if being called. Anarda, also attained direct meeting. Canto 11, Chapter 2 says, O best of the Kurus, eager to engage in the worship of Krishna, Narada Muni stayed constantly in Dwarka, which was always protected by the arms of Govinda. He stayed a long time in Dwarka. He didn't just go and visit. He liked it. And he stayed a long time. Because that was even nicer than seeing the Lord in his mind. So now we're going to go to Rupa Goswami and a section of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, is teaching the topic of sthiti, which he has translated as permanent association. So in person as opposed to in the mind. Guess what? It's quoting 10.12.12. It's a longer translation I'll read. Yogis may undergo severe austerities and penances for many births by practicing yama, niyama, asana, and pranayama, none of which are easily performed, yet in due course of time, when these yogis attain the perfection of controlling the mind, they will still be unable to taste even a particle of dust from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then can we describe about the great fortune of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, these cowherd boys, with whom the Supreme Personality Godhead personally lives permanently, and who see the Lord face to face? And Jiva Goswami makes his commentary. Now the focus is on permanent association, but that's our verse for this evening. Jiva Goswami writes, commentary, the yogis have gained control of their minds, dhritatma, by practice of Ashtanga Yoga, causing much suffering, krichchataha, for many lifetimes, but they cannot attain the dust from the Lord's feet. It is impossible to attain even the dust of the Lord's feet by such controlled mind. What past actions can be ascribed to the inhabitants of Braja, for whom the Lord himself, Krishna, Saeva, not any of his expansions, but is by his own choice, Svayam, spontaneously, not by any other cause, becomes continually the object of their eyes. Yad drik vishaya stitaha. No pious actions at all can be ascribed for this, that exalted position of continually seeing the Lord was natural for them. What then can be said of Krishna's friends, previously described, who actually played with the Lord, not just seeing him continually? And then here comes this point of emphasis. He is eternally situated as the object of their eyes. That is to say, you know, when Krishna's pastimes are over, everything goes into this unmanifest state, but there's still pastimes going on eternally. And that's a big topic. That's a big topic. The following is another example of stitta used with the present tense. And that is this Narayana Upanishad reference. Narayana is situated inside and outside, pervading everything that can be seen or heard in this universe. Well, that's the end of the section. I'll just give you a little preview for tomorrow, so you'll attend class tomorrow. He begins, Shukadev begins describing Agasura. So all of that up to text 13, tomorrow's verse, is just describing Braja. Specifically, it's describing the boys, but it expands it to describe all the residents of Braja because they have this good fortune that any other entity, any other person, the jnani, the yogi, the bhakta, the materialist, you know, karma, no other category of persons can experience what they experience. What to speak of? I'll share this. There's in the earlier parts of this chapter, there's a description of the relationship of service we know that there's five primary rasas. And get a little more technical, and it's each one of those five is called stayi bhava, steady ecstasy. Stayi, steady. And so for those that are in this category of friendship, the stayi bhava is friendship, sakya, but there's different categories of friends, and depending upon the category of friendship, there are different rasas or tastes or mellows, even within friendship. And it's like, you know, it's not just a bucket, it's an ocean. It's very, very wide and broad. So there's different categories of Krishna's friends. And he gives the list of, you know, this category is like this and that category is like that. It's one of the categories of rasa. But the most exalted of all is the cowherd boys. And the term that's used to describe with the cowherd boys, they're just playing. Like Arjun, his relationship with Krishna is also a relationship of friendship. And they treat each other equally. But Arjun knows in his rasa with Krishna, he knows of Krishna's divinity, but it just becomes overwhelmed by their friendship. And when he realizes Krishna's divinity in Bhagavad Gita, I've offended you in so many ways, this and that. It's because of our friendship. But you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the nature of opulence or divinity of Krishna, the more that becomes prominent, the less the intimacy is manifest. The more the intimacy is manifest, the more it eclipses the divinity. And so the residents of Vrindavan, they're just completely, you know, they're not even tuned in at all to his divinity. He makes the display of his opulence, and they go, wow, let's have lunch. Or where do we tell mom and dad? Like, you know, what Krishna did today was really cool. So, and they sing songs about it, and, you know, they're not naive. They're just immersed in the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. And their happiness is the happiness of being with Krishna. They're really attached to him. Super attached to him. There's this description that if they're going through a forest and over here is Krishna, over there is one of the cowherd boys, and there's a tree in between, and for a moment they can't see Krishna, like with the gopis, that moment becomes 12 years or more. Yugayatam Nameshina. They're really attached to him. There's earlier descriptions when Krishna goes into the forest. He's curious. He sees something. They can't stand it. They go running after him and say, let me touch him first. No, let me touch him. So they have, that's their competition is transcendental. They want to be with Krishna. They want to touch Krishna. They want to see Krishna. They want to play with Krishna. They want to, it's Krishna, Krishna. They're really attached to Krishna. So they have a really hard time when they get back to the village and they have to go home and not be with Krishna and take their bath and have a meal and go to sleep. And they can't go to sleep. They can't wait till the next morning. They can be with Krishna again. It's like that for the residents of, for the cowherd boys. So there's different categories of friendship, but they're in the superlative position. Queen Kunti is way up there too, although she's not in Braja. She's Krishna's father is Vasudeva, and Kunti is the sister of Vasudeva. So that's Krishna's aunt. You probably have somebody in your life that's your aunt or uncle. And so they're very, you know, in family relation, they're very close. And Krishna would treat Kunti like his mother. Come and touch her feet and offer her respects and, you know, do things that a subordinate will do to a superior, treat her in that very special, exalted way. And so there's an intimacy in their dealing. But she, recognizing Krishna has that disposition, her disposition was seeing his divinity. She saw him as Supersoul. And that must be really far out, seeing Supersoul walking around. But that's how she saw him. She's an educated Vaishnavi. She knows what Supersoul is. And she saw Krishna as Supersoul, manifested externally as her nephew. So she saw him in that way. And it was totally baffling for her to how the kind of affection, motherly affection that Mother Jasoda had for Krishna. Because it just didn't compute for her. And yet the love of Mother Jasoda is so strong that that love controlled Krishna. He cried when he saw her, the stick in her hand and so forth. It's in her prayers. Queen Kunti's prayers. So there's parental affection other than, let's maybe go here. There's Kunti, there's Vasudeva and Devaki, and there's Yashoda. And Yashoda's way up there compared to all others who had also parental affection. She is in the superlative position. All the residents of Vrindavan. That's what we're hearing in the 10th canto. That's what we're hearing in just this little section before the Agasura demon shows up. So they're in this super playful mood with the personality of Godhead, and in the path where they normally go taking care of the calves and playing, there's this big thing. My dear King Parikshit, thereafter, text 13, there appeared a great demon named Agasura, whose death was being awaited even by the demigods. The demigods drank nectar every day, but still they feared this great demon and awaited his death. The demon could not tolerate the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed in the forest by the cowherd boys. A lot of envy. So they see him and they're in this playful mood and they say, hey, let's go to this big cave. Let's go play in the cave. As they get closer, it doesn't look to be a cave. It looked like a big giant serpent lying in the road. But anyway, Krishna always protects us. Let's go. And off they go. Because that's their mood. That's their mood. And Krishna is concerned not just only for their safety, because Agasura, he knows, is intending to kill them, but he knows that they can't bear his absence for even a moment. And if they go inside this body of Agasura, how are they going to survive separation from him? That's his thought. So he wants to call out and have them stop, but it's too late. They've already gone in. So that's coming attractions. But all the while that these pastimes are being enacted, it's good to be mindful how attached they are to Krishna. And then comes some danger and Krishna to the rescue, but It's more about their attachment to Krishna than it is for their safety and Krishna, please protect us. Their life is attachment to Krishna. So let's see if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. So this point that you made, that Krishna comes as a human, but he's all-pervading.
Yeah.
And this contradiction we hear. Also, in Sri Upanishad, we, you know, hear that he walks but does not walk. He's near, he's far.
Yeah, right.
So when we hear all these contradictions, for our level, is it just to accept that Krishna has these inconceivable potencies and leave it at that?
Well, you can go a little further without being, you know, uncomfortable or too elastic. You can consider, okay, so he has his personal form. And he's all-pervading. And so those are contradictory, but how is it that he's all-pervading? And he's all-pervading in multiple ways. He's all-pervading. The source, so that, to just understand it, like, the sun went down, by the way. The sun is, it's okay. It's not in my eyes anymore. The sun is present through its rays. Throughout the solar system, although in one place. So Krishna, similarly, is all-pervasive, although he's in one place. And so, so he's all-pervasive by his expansion as super soul. He's all-pervasive by his presence as Brahman, and he's all-pervasive by his external energy within everything. Krishna is there as a super soul, and that everything that he's within is also his energy. He's everywhere. He's all pervasive by his energy. Now, we don't see his personal form within, you know, this nice backdrop here. Very creative. But it's his energy. So in that sense, because it's his energy, he's present. Prabhupada gives this example. I'm responding to your question by saying we can think about it, not just like accept it and go nod our heads, but, you know, how do we just accept it? So an example that Prabhupada gives is an industrialist. All that goes on inside that factory of the industrialist is by his direction. And, you know, he's off on the golf course putting around, and everything that's going on in the factory is his energy, although he's remote. He's not, so obviously there's a big difference between the factory owner and Krishna, because he's fully conscious of everything. But it's not like circuit overload fully conscious. He's expanded as super soul, and super soul is everywhere, and super soul is fully conscious. And it's not a problem for him. He's not like bothered. It's his unlimitedness being engaged. So he's present everywhere as the Brahmajyoti, because the cosmic manifestation is floating in the vastness of the spiritual sky. The Mahatattva is a cloud in the spiritual sky. So here we are in Chicago suburbs, and we're in the spiritual sky. We're not perceiving the spiritual sky, but the spiritual sky is all pervasive. And we're in the spiritual sky, but identifying with the cloud portion that's within the spiritual sky. So he's all-pervasive in a number of ways. And all of that is resting on his personal form. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the source of everything, the source of all incarnations, the source of all expansions, the source of all the Vishnu forms, the Paramatma feature, Mahavishnu. So he is everything. He's all pervasive. At the same time, he has a personal form. The word that I was searching for this morning is harmonize. He harmonizes all these contradictions because within him is everything. Within him means that personal feature. He localized and he's all pervasive. Because that all pervasiveness is something, a capacity that's within him, in his personal feature. Now you don't have to hold that in your mind every time you say it. It's just an understanding. He walks, and he does not walk. Okay, he doesn't walk like we walk, but he walks. He doesn't eat like we eat, but he eats, and so forth. Well, if he doesn't eat like we eat, then how does he eat? Well, he eats with his Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. All of his senses can do anything any of the other senses can do. So we can understand by hearing from scripture and hearing the explanations of scripture these apparently contradictory things about him. He harmonizes all apparent, is the key word, apparent contradictions. Because he's the source of everything.
Guru Maharaj, I have one more question. I found this...
How does that sit with you? Is that like comfortable or uncomfortable?
I'm trying to, digest it.
Okay, next.
So I found this little perplexing. You were describing how Queen Kunti is superior to her as Mother Devaki and then topmost as Mother Yashoda. So I thought, or at least since the Devaki gave birth to Lord Krishna.
Yeah, she's special.
Yeah, so I thought they...
Here's really simple. When Krishna appeared in the prison house of Kamsa, Devaki offered prayers because she knew, she saw and she knew, and he said, I'm the personality of Godhead. When Mother Yashoda had Krishna as her son, did she offer prayers? Why not? She doesn't see him as the personality of Godhead. You have some sons, but supposing you gave birth to your sons and that's it. No activity, you don't see them again. And then somebody over there is with those little boys and growing up and, for 12 years. Is there a difference between giving birth and being with as a mother as the child is going through everything the child is going through? So that's Shukadeva Goswami saying, as fortunate as Vasudeva and Devaki were, more fortunate were Nanda and Yashoda. They're with him 24/7 for all of his childhood pastimes. They didn't even see him again until he came back to their prison house and released them. They were thinking of him constantly. Or, here's another one. It's similar. At the time of Krishna's birth, Nanda gave some number of cows. There's different numbers. 2 lakhs and 20 lakhs, but he gave a lot of cows. Vasudeva didn't give any cows. But he did in his mind. because he knew Krishna was born. But he's in a prison. He can't give cows. So he did it in his mind. It's not the same. So more fortunate. And not only their greater fortune, they never saw him as the personality of Godhead. They sometimes, you know, And then Nanda would laugh. You see, it's Dinabandhu. You know who Dinabandhu is, right? In Vrindavan, Dinabandhu, the tour guide, he takes the elders get together and they start, you know, maybe he's God, and Dinabandhu starts rolling in laughter. I mean, like loud, and his whole body laugh, you know. He hears thunder and he comes running and crying. And for a moment he can't see us and he has a panic attack and he comes running and he steals butter and he's got... Dinabandhu, just like that. It goes on. So, I can't see. And it's a little bit is like that in Mother Yasoda when she sees the universe within Krishna's mouth. How can it be? Divinity is out of the question. There are moments when they wonder, all these powers and, you know, that their love is so strong they can't see it otherwise. That's the power of Braja. They all are like that. All right? Something else or you're done? You're done. Okay, good.
Has, like, more deep love? Yashoda, the cowherd boys?
They just have different varieties. But she often gets special praise from Shukadev. But it's just a different rasa. Now, one can say, it is said, that what is in Shantaras is included in Dasyaras plus. What's in Dasyaras is included in Sakyaras plus. And, you know, so there's some additional feature. So one might give that kind of argument that says, or logic, that says parental affection is everything there that's there in friendship plus.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is Amrita Mataji's question. In this verse, there is mention of the yogis who have controlled the mind. I was thinking this mind control for some time, this type of mind control for some time, as I feel having a controlled mind would help for attentive sadhana and services.
Definitely.
Would you kindly share if I need to explicitly practice cultivating the control of mind with some means like pranayam or some other austerities along with focused sadhana, or just the sadhana alone can take us to that stage of controlling the mind in due course of time?
Prabhupada never encouraged us to do pranayama. And I don't know of any of the acharyas that encouraged us to do pranayama. Now, doesn't mean, you know, if somebody that does pranayama, they get in the penalty box or something like that. They get a spanking or something. But we don't need. It's not from our disciplic succession to do such things. It's sufficient. Now, the power of mind control through sound is better than pranayama. Next.
The emotions that permeate the spiritual world also exist in the material world.
Yes.
Yet we say that the love of the mother is the closest to Krishna's love.
Mm-hmm.
Is the basis of all emotions in this world also pure in and of itself, but material nature is the reason it becomes perverted? Why is a mother's love the only emotion that's unaffected?
It's not that the mother's love is unaffected, and it's not that the mother's love is Krishna's love. The closest thing to love is the love of the mother, and the the feature of the mother's love that makes it closest to pure love or spiritual love is the selflessness with which a mother serves. Serve. Not unconditional service. You know, that's a loving mother. There's the other kind too. But, so that's the expression. Now her question specifically is this love of all types naturally, that pure condition is just, you know, conditioning mucks it up. Well, the reflection is not the same as the object that it reflects. The shadow is not the same as the object that's casting the shadow. So the comparison isn't accurate. Shadow is not the object. It's a shadow, or it's a reflection. And when that contaminated consciousness is removed, then true love is what remains. You know, the true identity of the soul, the true identity of emotions, the true identity of everything. But you have to get on the other side of the reflection. Do we have some questions over here?
Yeah. So this question is from Visalaksha Prabhu. He asked some time back, maybe it was already covered. So he asked, the degree of intimacy of cowherd boys with Lord Shri Krishna, is it a degree of loving service? Kindly enlighten.
Is it the degree of loving service?
Yeah.
Or a degree of loving service?
Is it a degree of loving service?
Do you understand what I'm trying to get clear? What was it? I want to get his question clear. Are you clear what his question is?
Is it the, like in cowherd boys, they got the intimacy with Krishna because of the degree of loving service? I mean,
because of the degree of loving service, yeah. Yes.
And then next, Uttama Bhakta Prabhu is asking, I'm more focused while hearing the Lord Krishna's pastimes, I'm more focused on sweetness aspect than philosophical aspect.
Okay.
So generally speaking, should sweetness aspect be above philosophical aspect?
No. There's no should be.
And this is the last one from Taruni Radha Mataji. She asks, this is from the yesterday's evening class, I wanted to know the personalities in the Bhagavatam who can lead one to Vrajabhakti.
The person in the Bhagavatam that can lead one to Vrajabhakti.
Yeah.
Well, all the persons in the Bhagavatam, the eternal associates of Krishna and the mood of love carried by those eternal associates of Krishna, they're the ones.
And the second part is that Gauranga Mahaprabhu heard the stories of Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj hundreds of times.
Yeah.
They both end up at Goloka. So
Who ends up in Goloka?
Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj.
No.
So her question is, so can you please elaborate what endeared them to Mahaprabhu?
They're pure bhakti. But they didn't end up in Goloka. But the purity of their love for the Supreme Lord endeared them. Okay. Yeah. She's got something.
Okay.
You can come back.
Guru Raj, this question is from the Nectar of Devotion.
Mm.
We hear that for to counteract or to help with seva aparadhas, chanting is the way. But if we are doing, while we're chanting offensively, there is no way we can be saved. So that, you know, that sounds like really scary in one sense. And it sounds like, cause we're, you know, when I heard that as I'm trying to chant more attentively, it's going exactly in the opposite direction.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Here, because it's a third category. You know the three. Shuddhanam, Namabhas, Namaparad. So, Namaparad, you elevate from Namaparad by the clearing stage or Namabhas. That's what you're doing. It's offensive if you're making no effort to overcome those offenses. You just, you do a lot of those things wantonly, indiscriminately. So, you're not, it's not doing more damage than good. You're in the clearing stage. You follow? And then the clearing stage has its symptoms. But it's abhas. It's namabhas. It's the shadow of the holy name. A reflection of the holy name. It's not shuddhanam. That's what we're doing presently. So is that detrimental or beneficial? It's beneficial. So the stay focused on trying to improve. And the sine curve is there. There's more effort to improve and there's less effort to improve and more distraction and more, you know, stuff. And then more effort to improve again. So you just keep, that unsteady bhakti is part of abhas, bhakti abhas, or nam abhas. So the operative principle is making some effort towards the goal. Are you scared still?
No. That helps.
Huh?
That helps. I thought there was just no hope. Like, intention is, you know, just... Yeah,
okay, good. But it's not, you know, it's not that Lord Chaitanya and his followers are setting you up to get punched in the face. Take the holy name, start making offenses and get smacked. That's not. And even people, what to speak of you who are trying, they're people that make fun of the holy name. They make fun of the devotees chanting the holy name. They joke about it. That's good. If that's good, then what about what you're doing? There's a potency in that chanting that you're doing. That's a permanent benefit to the soul. That's good. Now keep going. Don't like, oh, okay, it's good. I don't have to worry now. We make good better. Then that's the clearing stage. And you become slack in that effort, and then it goes in the darker direction again. So keep making the effort. And with the understanding that there is a sine curve that goes on. Unsteady bhakti, a standard practice. Keep going.
No?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. When you are telling that Krishna is all pervasive in different features, I was remembering which acharya I forgot. He was saying it is ill to consider a Vaishnava devotee dies. He presents all the time, something like that. I forgot exactly. So how to understand with respect to pure devotees, acharyas and...
Living still and sound. That's the verse, right?
Mm-hmm.
One reason is ill who say that Vaishnavas die.
Yes, yeah.
That one?
Yes.
So, because they're living still and sound. I mean, we're reading commentary by acharyas. We get a sense of that acharya by reading this one, that one. We get a sense of Prabhupada. He's available, accessible in the Bhaktivedanta purports. And you can palpably experience it. That's his presence, and that's recorded sound vibration. It's the same and different simultaneously. It's not you're in the room with Prabhupada. But you hear the recorded sound or read the book, and you're getting his association through sound or recorded sound. So he reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die. The body is dead for sure. Or it's no longer animate. It's no longer moving about. But the sound is there.
Hi.
You have something?
This question is about Rajanga Bhakti. Yesterday evening we were discussing. Just like it's a thematic question for me, in the sense that we hear that Rajanga Bhakti only can be practiced after one is liberated.
No.
Okay. Then... I mean, as is followers of ISKCON, we are like mostly follow our acharyas, our practices are all, so kind of seeds like a, there's a seed of Rajanga Bhakti.
Is yes.
Okay.
Right from the very beginning. Right from the very beginning. And it's not matured, but it's right from the very beginning. Followers of Rupa Goswami are followers of Rajanga Bhakti. In the beginning, it's Vaidhi Bhakti. That it's Vaidhi Bhakti that leads one to this by proper following.
And then maybe it's later, like when we hear this pastime.
Do you want to comment on that? Nectar devotion topic? from nectar devotion perspective? He's our nectar devotion teacher.
Maharaj, I also remember that when we say Vaidhi Sadhana, Raghunava Sadhana, Bhava, Prema, everything is pure devotional service.
Yeah.
And we actually were discussing all this, me and Prabhu. I was just saying, what I understood was that Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, when one properly practices, it leads to Raga Anuga Sadhana Bhakti and Bhava Bhakti. That means that one has to know that it's leading me there, not just like my own effort. I get it.
Yes.
It's not, it's leading me there, and it's like clinging to the lotus feet of Rupa Goswami, which means clinging to the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That means we're on that path. I take up Vaidhi Sarada Bhakti, following Rupa Goswami. I'm on that path of Raghunuga Bhakti. That's where it's going to lead me. And it's the faith that's inside as I'm doing my practices now, just, you know, according to the vidhis of Sarada Bhakti. And as purification comes, then, and that mercy that comes from those that are the Raghatmika Bhaktas and the followers of the Raghatmika Bhaktas, the Raga Bhakti followers, the attraction grows in that direction. Just by being a follower of Lord Chaitanya, which means being a follower of Rupa Goswami, which means all these things. It's built into the system. It's not like you just, it's not mechanical. There, it does require a conscious attraction, but it comes, you know, it doesn't, I don't have to be a liberated soul, and then I can start thinking about it. In one sense, bhakti of any kind is on a liberated platform. So in that sense, yes. But, you know, the liberated, free from the modes of nature and no more karma operating in my life. Now then there's this another, anyway. From the time of initiation, prarabdha karma is eliminated. It's a very clear statement in the scripture, Rupa Goswami's writings. So, are we good? Okay.
I have a related question.
Okay.
So, we were discussing about this Raghunuga Bhakti in the NOD class, and then the question was about when we, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhaktas, we have role models to look up to, and Raghunuga Sadhana Bhaktas, like the way, who they are aspiring and this and that, we don't have anybody speaking about it. So I said that it's more internal, and when someone is in that platform, they don't speak about it.
Yes, correct. It's part of the practice, is it is internal. It's not this other way. But, you know, the guidelines are there within Rupa Goswami's writings. Nice point.
And so then the discussion also went on about, so when do I know that I am ready to go on to Raghunuga Bhakti?
Well, you know, it's not like you, that's another misconception. You're on the Raghunuga Bhakti train. You don't have to get off this train, get on that train. You're already on it. It's just, you know, as your bhakti matures, then there's a natural attraction that arises. It's not like, hey, the other kids have a hula hoop, so I want to get a hula hoop. Or whatever the latest is. I want to get a skateboard, because all the kids have a skateboard. It's not like that.
Somewhat related. So it is about the point of application. Like when we hear this nice example from the scriptures, or even in the pastimes of Krishna, we were, you know, discussing how we are hearing how the physical presence is, you know, so wonderful than just the meditation in the mind.
Yes.
So when it comes to application, I heard that it's more effective when it is more, when we can relate to that, to the present situation, like taking the example of presence of Krishna. Similarly, we have presence of spiritual master, devotees. Can we take application in those lines like that?
Which application of what?
Like when I hear this, I've, past time that physical presence of Krishna is in very fortunate situation. So similarly, to my application point of his physical presence of spiritual master, has a more fortunate situation like that. I mean, just trying to connect to the application area, like.
It's internal for starters, because how are we going to go see Krishna? I mean, it is deity form, yes, or a picture form, yes, but it's more a meditation and a mood, but that's the application part as far as I can suggest. Kabhi habi bolo sedi namar. The anticipation of coming to that stage. Okay? Prabhupada ki.